I want to like write novels someday, and like I'll be able to use my experience to write from my heart and stuff. But then I think try to think about my experiences. I'm like, huh, I don't even know what those experiences were like. I experienced them, and I still don't know.
Quinn, welcome to the podcast. I am so excited that you're here. I'm so excited for this episode.
Well, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me on.
You are someone who I have known. You're one of the people I still talk to on a regular basis that I've known for maybe the longest in my life.
That's probably true in my case too. Yeah. I mean, especially since, yeah, like moving to Columbus, I moved there because lost most of my friends. So, but I mean, yeah, of all the people I met in Columbus, you're one of the few that, yeah, I still like, yeah, communicate much with. So, yeah.
Well, we met through homeschool gym classes, which for anyone who doesn't know what that is, probably sounds like the weirdest thing in the world.
It's a couple Chad kids destroying everyone else at dodgeball.
That's a great way to put it. It really was. It was every Thursday at the rec center. They would have dodgeball classes, and it wasn't just dodgeball, all sorts of gym classes.
Dodgeball was the best.
Dodgeball was 100% the best. And we would go and play, and I met you and your brother there, and you were probably what, 14, 13 at the time?
Yeah, probably 14, yeah.
Yeah, and I was a year or two younger than that.
With
And
your Jedi braid, your
with my,
Padawan.
oh my goodness, my Jedi, is that really when you met me? I had the braid.
Yes.
That was the craziest thing. I was so obsessed with Star Wars that I think it was like this part of my hair braided. And then I had
Grown
the
long.
barber do a haircut around the braid.
That was pretty hardcore. Respect.
It was so terrible because I didn't know how to braid my own hair. So every day, my mother would have to braid my hair for me. Or, and this was worse, I just wouldn't braid it. So it looked like I had half a
No.
haircut. Because
Hey.
this side was all cut, and then there was just long hair right here for apparently no reason.
Hey, Meshach, you gotta be like the real Padawans. The real Padawans braided their own hair because they didn't have mothers.
This is true. This is true. I'm a little embarrassed that I never learned how to braid my own hair, if we're being totally honest here. I know now. I know how to braid hair now, but at age 13, I had absolutely no idea how to braid my hair.
Well, I could use some lessons because I'm not very good at it, and I got all of this to work with. So,
It's looking long, dude. I'm liking the fit. It's looking good. Oh my goodness.
thanks. Yeah, I'm glad that it's finally getting to a point where I don't have to constantly wear my bandana to keep it out of my eyes.
I
That
am struggling
awkward
with that
middle
right
phase.
now. Sorry, what was
Oh,
that?
that awkward middle phase.
It's terrible. I'm right now, like if I let it loose, it just falls down and it looks awful. So I keep putting it in a small bun, but I can only get a tiny bit of it. And I was talking to Marco last week, and he apparently had seen one of the most recent Sam and Meshachs where this was on display. And he went, what are you doing there with your hair? What's going on? And I said, is everything all right? Is there a problem? And he went, everyone's allowed to make their own choices. And then he left it at that. He wasn't going to say anything else, but I can taste the disapproval in his words.
Oof. I mean, you gotta take that seriously because Marco's got exquisite hair, so.
He's maybe has the best hair. It's so good. It's so like
Yes.
luscious and voluptuous. I don't even know what the right adjectives are to describe this hair.
Voluptuous hair. Yeah, I'm gonna have to walk up to Marco and be like, "You have voluptuous hair."
I appreciate it too. That's the thing about Marco.
Yes. I'm gonna need better after like putting all that effort into growing this hair like that.
Exactly. Yes. The true power comes from having long hair. I believe.
Anyway. Yeah. I mean, it's a Samson effect. Like, grow your hair long and you can slay like 1,000 men with a donkey jawbone. So.
I mean, hey, if it works, it works.
Yes.
Dude, but so. I guess it's needless to say then that if we met at homeschool gym, both you and I were in fact homeschooled.
Yes. No, I just public school, but like our gym class sucked, so did homeschool gym instead. got a transfer credit.
I love this. So what was, maybe I've asked you this question before. What were some of the reasons as to why you decided to homeschool, or your parents decided to homeschool, or you decided to continue homeschooling? Because I know a lot of people kind of do it for elementary school and then stop at the high school point, and neither you or I stopped.
Well, it's pretty simple, actually. You see, when I was a little child, I had a lot of medical and neurological issues. And like I was diagnosed with Asperger's, not very social, very unusual kid. And like when I was getting, I don't know, rated, judged by school people or whatever, they said that I wouldn't make it in public school or whatever. And like, yeah, and like, and also just the way that they were interacting with me, my mom was not very impressed. Like, it's obvious they didn't know how to interact with an unusual child very well, or just children in general. So she's like, you know what? I go learn how to homeschool because my son's going to get destroyed in public school. And that's really how it started. And well, I've liked it ever since, so never thought of like going to high school or anything.
So your mom didn't think that the teachers or faculty was properly equipped to handle? It wasn't necessarily the other kids.
Well, she's also concerned that I probably get eaten alive by the other kids, being an unusual kid. Public school kids can be pretty horrible, and I mean, well, any kids can, but like, at least in like respectful, good homeschool communities, the parents tend to be on top of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas in public school, the parents send their children away for other people to take care of them. So yeah.
Absolutely. No, that's totally true. What do you think are some of the advantages that you got from being homeschooled? I know at least for me, I felt like I had way more time to focus on the things that I wanted to focus on in my life.
I definitely agree with that. Like, I might have not gotten interested in physics if I weren't homeschooled. It's I watched some Star Trek and like, oh, this is cool. I want to learn how this stuff works. So then like got some video lecture series on physics and just started watching it at 13. And like, this is cool. But like in public school, I would just like be doing their routine of like, I don't know, they have like 3 million classes a day. And you learn nothing in all the classes, and like you have no energy left to pursue your own interests. Of course, different schools are of different quality, but you know, yeah. So I definitely think, yeah, pursuing interests was much better in homeschool. And I think another thing that I really benefited, well, I guess there are now two other things I'm thinking of. One is my love of learning was never squelched in homeschool.
Yeah.
You agree with that. You've seen that. Like I was able to pursue what he's interested in. Like, of course, my mom had a certain curriculum requirements to pursue, but then she left a lot of space for us to pursue our own interests, which helped us grow a love for learning instead of a hatred for it. And then another thing is, in homeschool, I wasn't taught how to follow true think or correct think. Like, there's no propaganda or indoctrination in my homeschooling experience. I just, I explored things I was interested in, whereas in public school, it seems like, I mean, of course, I'd never been there, so I couldn't say myself, but based on what I've seen on the internet, what I've heard from people who have gone to public school is, like, it just definitely seems like they teach a specific way of thinking. And like, it's shifted over time, like back a while ago when the Republicans had a lot of power, like I'm sure they were teaching a lot of more conservative Republican values, like, America is best, we do nothing wrong, yada yada. And then like nowadays with the Democrats in power of society is like just crazy, some of the things they've seen. Like, it's almost like oftentimes they're teaching to hate our country, and like it's like, can't we go somewhere in the middle where right. we're aware that we've done some pretty horrible things, but we also like created a democratic government system that's changed the world. Like, yeah.
Right, right. Not having that kind of deep indoctrination is huge in terms of the way that you tend to think about the world. Do you also think you have less of a, I've sort of noticed in myself, a little bit less of a follow the leader kind of mentality about things? I have a really tough time, or I did, especially when I started university, a really tough time with people who proclaim themselves as figures of authority over me.
I relate to that, really. Yeah. Like, something, a way that I've always been, I don't know if it's homeschooling or if just both of us have a similar personality, but I assume that homeschooling at least bolsters this, but like, I've always seen everyone as equals to me. Like, I'll respect authority in the sense, like, if my parents tell me something to do, when I was a kid, I'd like follow what they say because I trust their judgment as my parents. And like, I'll respect people who've earned their power through showing their quality and all that. But at the same time, I see everyone as equals. Like, I really don't care if you're a homeless dude on the street or the president of the United States. Like, I'll kind of view both as the same. Like, if they have something good to say, then I'll respect what they say. If they say something I disagree with, I'll argue against it. If they do something they consider immoral or terrible, I'll openly disapprove of them. And
well, there's a weird notion, not weird actually, there's a notion that emerges through homeschooling, which is this sense of, we're all in this together, we're all learning together. I mean, I know at least to some extent, my parents are very well-educated people that have great ideas. They don't know everything. And so when we were learning things, me and my siblings as kids, sometimes my parents would be learning those things along with us. We'd almost be learning it together. It was less of, I know X, I will, you know, teach it to you from the mountaintop, and more of, oh, can we figure out this path together? And so I think that is part of what made me feel very comfortable to raise my hand and go, hey, I don't know if I agree with that. Or can we look at it from this angle? Or can we actually explore this thing?
I definitely can relate to that. Like, even my mom said, like, she used to hate reading, but she actually started to like reading when she started teaching us, because, yeah, like, she's learning it along with us, and it was just so much better than when she was forced to read in public school.
That's the thing, too. When people talk about their education, peers of mine now, the words are like forced. They use words like forced or required or I had to. And I can resonate with that a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
But by and large, most of my education experience was not forced or had to or felt like this was something I needed to do. And I imagine that that freedom probably caused me to think about the world in a different way.
Definitely. Like, it's no coincidence that public schools are often referred to as being a prison.
And some of them literally are. They'll lock the doors and students are not allowed to leave until 3 p.m.
Yeah. And just the sad thing is, like, they tend to think that in order to learn, you have to just, like, spend the entire day just shoving down information. But that's how you don't learn. Like in homeschooling, I didn't have, how long is a school day? I don't even know.
I think it depends on the school, isn't it? This is so funny that we're two guys in our 20s who have no idea how long the American school day is. Yeah. This is actual insanity, Quinn. I'm going to Google how long an American school day is. But I think we should both just appreciate in this moment how weird our lives are that this is a question that we have to ask.
I bet a lot of people are jealous.
I bet they are. Okay, the school day in elementary and high school usually runs from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. or 3:30 with an hour for lunch. So that would be four, so like 6 hours with a 1 hour break, right? Eight to three.
Okay, so that's not terrible.
But then there's homework generally stacked on top of that.
Yes. Okay. And the homework can be as long as the school day, depending on how things go.
I had friends that would have to do homework until 1 a.m. and then wake up at 6 a.m. The next morning and go back to school.
Yeah. And that's how you kill your love of learning.
First of all, completely agree. I think that my love of learning is just as high as it was when I was 8 years old. I'm still curious about everything. I still love, this is the weirdest part. I don't know if you experienced this when you went to college. I loved receiving assignments. I thought that receiving assignments was great because I had just spent the last 4 years of high school designing all of my own projects. Basically, I was trying to come up with, okay, I'm reading this book and I'm reading this other book. I should write a paper about how they relate to one another, or I should try to come up with a project to display my work. I got to college and they said, okay, read this book, take a quiz on it, read another book, take a quiz on it, read another book, now take an exam. And I was like, what, bro, this is great. Like, it was so relieving. Like, thank God that hadn't been crushed out of me. I enjoyed it so much. Just for the first couple of semesters. I thought, this is great.
That's hilarious. It's like, woo, someone else can think for me for once. I can save those resources for don't have to do all my own research and like figuring out exactly what direction I want to go with stuff. I can just follow their guidelines. I'm trying to think, have I ever felt that way about it? I guess there was a certain level of relief about, yeah, I guess having that directedness, like, because on my own, I would start with a blank slate and like, oh, where do I start? And I mean, I would manage to learn things and get things done, but like, it's definitely a lot of overhead, thinking. So yeah, I'd say it definitely was nice when like, I'm like, oh, I want to learn how to do this art, and my art teacher is like, you do this art by doing this. Yeah.
Though I do think after the first semester or after 2 semesters of that, I
Yeah.
was done. I was absolutely, hey, I've been doing this on my own for 4 years. I know what I'm doing. Why are you still telling me what to do? Right? Like that the wave came back. There was a nice year of like, oh, this is great. I don't have to think a whole lot about this. And then okay, now I'm willing to think again. I'm good. I'm back.
Yeah, I'd agree. Like, for a while, it was nice to have that directedness, but with it all being directed and all being in rigid assignments, it eventually became stifling. And
Yeah.
I just think it's amazing that some people make it all the way through public school to college, and some of these people still like to learn. Like, kudos to those people. Like, jeez.
Yeah, that is incredible. So when you say love of learning, what do you mean by that?
I guess like it's something that I enjoy. Like, I get a high off of learning new information that I find useful or interesting. Like, I mean, it's almost like a dopamine source, like scrolling on social media, except I'm actually learning something. What would you say your experience with love of learning is? Or I don't even know if you've I didn't pay attention to see if you've used that word too, but
Oh no,
if.
I've definitely used it in conversation. I don't know if I've used it in this one, but for me, it's about not being afraid to do things that are hard. So I'm really willing to bite off more than I can chew because I'm confident that I can learn the things I need to learn in order to get the job done. And I also love learning those things because it's making me better at whatever it is that I'm trying to do. So maybe to take this to probably the most prime example is the red crystal, which at age 13,
That's a lot to bite off.
it was a lot to bite off. It was probably technically too much to bite off. At age
It
13, to say, I'm going to write a feature film. I'm going to cast it. I'm going to put adults in it. I'm going to get equipment, build sets, and shoot an entire feature film, which, by the way, takes place in a weird sci-fi fantasy world that doesn't look anything like Central Ohio.
Yeah, you just pull out all the stops with that. That's like me, where I'm like, hey, I'm gonna make a Minecraft server, but it's not gonna be a normal one. I can have mods and plugins and make it medieval fantasy themed and have roleplay in it. Oh, and yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah.
But I guess, oh, I guess it's probably a good way to handle it in a lot of cases, as long as you don't need to be practical immediately. Because, I mean, based on what I've seen, it seems like doing things that are more slightly above what you can handle is like the fastest way to learn, best way to learn. Like if you bite off way too much, then you'll just not learn anything because you'll just be in this crazed confusion. But then if you don't bite off enough, then it's like you're still learning some stuff, but it's like you're just learning the basics. Like there's just something about pushing yourself that allows you to learn more and faster. And I guess that's something that like schools are an antithesis to, actually. Like in college, like you always learn start from basic, like a 101 class. And like most of my 101 classes were too easy for me. And like I understand the need, like when it's a standardized school, you need these basic classes to make sure that everyone has the basic coverage. But like I think something good about homeschooling and just good about any independent stuff, like if you're an independent entrepreneur or independent creative, like the ability to just push yourself to your limit, I think that really helps one learn the best.
Yes. Well, I think I totally agree with you. I think there's an interesting thing that happens in college, though, as well, which is you go from the intro, and then the jump might be further than you are. At least this has happened for me, where the first class might be too easy, and the second one might be too hard. That,
Yeah, poorly calibrated.
right, without being able to kind of calculate my own curriculum, I'm not able to ride that edge as much as I am when I'm designing the projects on my own to go, okay, I understand, a big portion of this. At age 13, I had already made two films. One was 25 minutes long, the other was 40 minutes long. I sort of knew what I was doing. I had not said anything in a fantasy world, really. I also had not worked on a film of this scale. But I had made things before. I knew that I could conceivably, if I learned enough information, I could make it to this level. And so that's what I was doing in some ways with Red Crystal. And then of course enlisting the help of people around me to build that up and shore up
Yeah.
my weaknesses and yeah.
And people think that homeschoolers can't be social.
That's the most ridiculous thing on the planet. That's so crazy.
Is like when people say, "Oh, you're shy because you're homeschooled." I'm like, "No, I'm shy because I've had emotional trauma, but that's another story." Yeah. And like it just made me think of another thing. Like you're talking about, yeah, like pushing yourself, making Red Crystal, and then push yourself further, making Qualton Search. Never finished it, but the thing is, we learned a ton from making it. But in like a school setting, we've either been considered a failure or like an incomplete or something, or like,
Yeah.
yeah.
That's oh dude, that's such a good point. So for anyone listening, we made The Red Crystal, which was a feature film. And before The Red Crystal was totally finished, it was like ready, it was about to come out. We started on a sequel for it, where Quinn played, you played one of the leads.
That
Good old Simon Lebault.
was funny. Yes,
And
the
I gotta find that time when you played that song. That was so good. That was
man in
so fun.
the
Little
red coat.
ukulele song in the backyard. I love that.
My ukulele.
And conceivably, someone could say we bit off more than we could chew on that one. There were a number of factors which were beyond our control, which caused the film not to happen. But you're 100% right that we learned so much about what is feasible to shoot. What sets can you make look realistic? How much can you reasonably shoot in a day? Is this a script that actually can be shot, or is this really a pipe dream? Right? Like we had answers to all of those questions by the end of whatever it was, 2.5 months of photography, something like that. That I think we shot for at least 10, 20 days. I mean, we shot a lot of that movie even though when we looked at the footage at the end, we had only shot a quarter of the script.
Yeah. But it's just crazy, like, even though it was never completed, just seeing the rise in quality between the two. Like, you learned so much about framing it right, using a good camera, how to use it properly. I'd say good acting, but I was in it, so. But hey, gotta say, the best way to have a realistic sword fight is to push your opponent in a river without them expecting it.
That was awesome. I love, so we shot that at your old house, and you had that creek that ran behind the property, and we literally, both of you guys were in tunics, and you maybe were in chainmail. Is that possible that you were like...
Oh yeah, the other guy.
Okay.
Wow, yeah, I was wearing chainmail. But we were actually, yeah, we were probably both wearing a little bit of armor. Yeah.
And you had shields and swords, and you went, the fight was choreographed so that you started on the bank. There was an argument that exploded into a fight, which went into the creek and up the other side. So you fought across the creek, which was so cool to shoot. I remember standing in there, I was wearing flip-flops and shorts that were like hiked up to my thighs and holding the camera on a tripod, shooting the sequence. It was beautiful. We didn't do anything like that for Red Crystal.
Yeah, it's easily one of my favorite parts of filming that. My favorite part of that is that did not intend to there's not in the script to literally knock the person into the river.
That's right.
Or the creek. Yeah. But yeah.
And it was such a perfect moment too. It worked so well, yeah, on screen. I have the cut of that somewhere. I told you I found it. Maybe I sent it to you. If I didn't, I'll have to post it at some point somewhere. It actually, for shooting it at age 15, turned out shockingly well. Shockingly well for 15-year-old filmmakers.
Man. Yeah, I'd love to see that. like to see what things looked like back then. I only have vague memories.
Yeah. So you were homeschooled entire childhood, and then you went to college.
Yeah.
I am currently working on a book. Did I tell you about this?
Book, which I'm trying to remember.
I'm working on a book.
Is it based in Molliest, like a new
version? That's a different thing. That's a novel. I'm working on a book right now about the transition from high school to college as a homeschooler. Sort of trying to put together a guide for other people who were in our shoes and some of the pitfalls that I experienced that maybe I can give them a little bit of advice about how to avoid. That's primarily my goal. And so I guess I'm curious, just generally, what was that experience like for you going from 12 years of homeschooling to immediately being in a liberal arts school?
Well, for one, I did do some college credit plus classes at community college to like get used to having a more formal classroom experience. So like definitely for homeschoolers transitioning from homeschool to college or whatever, I definitely recommend that. So that's definitely helped me, but yeah, definitely going into college initially, it was a major shock to my system because I was used to always like living with my family. Like they were always part of my life. Like, we always were, yeah, around, like just me being on my own for the first time, like needing to make new friends and navigate all this by myself was definitely a bit, was a bit of a new experience. Though I wouldn't say that's necessarily a universal homeschooler experience. Like, part of it was also that, like, I was rather clingy to my family for a variety of reasons, so that definitely made it harder. But yeah, what was it like when I first got in? And again, also I was very shy, so it that made things really difficult. And I've definitely gotten better at that in recent years, though still got plenty of anxiety. Hard to think of specifics, but basically the entire environment was very foreign to me, and that caused a lot of stress and getting used to. But then the classes I actually handled quite well. Like, I mean, like one of my first semester classes I had was printmaking class, some art class. And it was supposed to be an intro, but it was actually very involved, lots of work. But like, because I always was used to pursuing my passions, and I chose this class because I was interested in art, I was like, okay, I'll just invest however much time I need to get this done and to learn this. And so like, yeah, I got through all my classes at the very end of the semester, cramming for exam finals. Like, I remember I'm like, oh man, I have all the stuff I need to do. Just my art class alone, I have like so many hours of work I need to get done in like a couple of days. And so I just like, for some reason, I'm like, I need some nice upbeat music. I know, I'll choose just a bunch of Disney cartoon music. Plugged my headphones in and just like worked 12 hours straight for 2 days in a row to get it done.
Oh my goodness. That sounds brutal, dude. Oh my gosh.
It was a bit intense because it was a bit, some of it was even physical work. Like I had to, I had to like slice the metal plates into pieces I use for printing, and then I'd have to like file the edges down to be round and smooth and stuff. And that was easily the filing. That was easily the most annoying part. Ugh, it was loud, grindy, and very time consuming. But yeah, like, yeah, my experience with like just narrow focusing on whatever I want to do and just pursuing it till it's done, I think that really helped with that. So yeah, I'd say that getting big creative open-ended projects done, like my homeschool experience, was very good for that. But then when it came to more regimented like assignments and stuff, although, like I said earlier, there was a certain level of relief about like not having to do everything myself. It's just something I wasn't as used to. And although it wasn't as big of a problem earlier on, apart from adapting to it, it definitely became stifling later on. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's fascinating and makes a lot of sense to me. One of the things that I'm writing a bit about is the fact that for the first year of college, it seems that most of the conversations that happen are about high school. Students have this proclivity to just talk about high school because it's this common denominator that everyone shares. And as soon as that crops up in conversation, I have nothing to add. I can't say anything about high school. We just had to Google how long a American school day is. Like, I don't know jack about high school. My experience is so weird and wacky that I didn't have anything to share. And I remember that making me feel very isolated and out of the loop, because those are frequently the conversations where the most people could be involved. And everyone had stories to share, and everyone was sort of bonding over this common experience, and I just had nothing. I was empty.
Huh. That's interesting. Me personally, I was so shy and stuff Although I did like interact with some people, overall, like I was just isolated in general, like didn't even like get to the point of talking about high school. But I think that the smallish, it actually got pretty big at one point, but anyway, the friend group that I formed were more the unusual kids. So like they probably did talk quite a bit about high school and stuff, but like they also talked about a lot of other stuff, a lot of like more unusual stuff, and
So
that's kind of
things that
how I
you
fit
were
in.
able to latch onto maybe more than this foreign experience that you never had.
Yeah. Like when I got in, like when I learned about the fencing team and got interested in fencing, like we're all talking about fencing, so
Right. That makes sense. Well, one of the things, so I remember, this is crazy. The reason I'm at this school is because of you. Like,
Oh
100%, there's no way I would ever be at this school if it weren't for you, because it was 2, 3 months into your freshman year, and you invited me up to spend the night, and I come up, and I'm there. Might as well go on a tour. So I tour the school, see the cinema department.
the high
Great.
cinema department.
And then really don't think anything of it. The application was free to send, so I sent it in. And then when I got accepted and I got a really good offer, a really nice offer that Denison sent me, I went, I mean, I could go there. That seems fun. Quinn's there. And so really, dude, if you had not been here, there's absolutely no way I would be here at all. But what I was going to say is I remember coming just whatever that was, 2, 3 months into freshman year, and you had a group of friends and you were on the fencing team. My memory of you freshman year is as someone who was relatively involved, at least in that capacity.
And it's hard for me to clearly remember it because like first off it's been a bit, and also it was def my memories are definitely tinged by my overall feel like emotions about it, which makes reality a little more fuzzy. So like yeah, I'd agree. I've definitely formed a friend group, but yeah, but I also, I'm trying to remember exactly the timeline of all this happening, because I definitely remember a lot of struggle trying to relate or interact with anyone. I guess part of it too is that even the friends who I did make, I struggled opening up fully to them. Or like even when they had like similarities to me, I was generally the quietest one there. So that definitely so I'd say I probably fit in less well than it appeared on the surface. But at the same time, I did have a lot of valuable friendships, and over the course of well, the 3.5 years I was at Denison, I definitely I got a bit better at opening up to the few people that I continued getting closer with. So I definitely like now that I'm out of college, I have like a handful of friends from college who I still connect to, like who I can now connect to on a pretty deep level. Like a few people I can talk to, like I talk to you and interact with you, but I'd say the majority of the social you saw was me being in a crowded room and feeling alone. Yeah. And I guess another part of it is I'd say I'm better at blending in than I am at socializing, especially back then. So I
What do
could
you mean by
appear
that?
like I was like I could appear like I was comfortable and fitting in and like engaging with the group, but then like on the inside I was feeling unfulfilled and like rarely could talk about the things that truly matter to me and inserting myself into certain conversations. Like I'd say, my personality, I tend to be good at, I guess being a social chameleon, but like, which can be misleading to how comfortable and engaged I am in the group.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. You mentioned feeling like you couldn't open up to people, but then saying that now you feel like there are people you can open up to. What
Yeah,
did you
small handful.
find were tools or strategies to go from that one place to the other?
Probably the strongest strategy is desperation.
Mm.
Yeah. Like, eventually you just get fed up with feeling crappy or feeling alone and stuff, and then like you gradually start to lash out at that and like put yourself wildly out there, and like even if it's a slow process, it eventually builds on itself. Like I remember one of the periods where I was feeling the most lonely, I started this habit where the brick path between like the upperclassmen dorms and then an academic quad.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and like on the side of the path there are like these 3 foot tall brick and concrete walls or whatever. Like I just started whenever I'd walk to class, jump up on the wall and walk on the wall to class. Like leap over it. Yeah, and like leap over the gaps and yeah, and like just not care like if anyone's staring at me. I didn't look anyway. But yeah, so like just I just started rebelling and doing little random things to that just yeah, forced me to put myself out there.
So you would do things that maybe made you feel kind of uncomfortable in the moment, and you just sort of pushed through it and got yourself in a position where you were just like, I'm just gonna do this. I'm just gonna do what I want to do right now.
Yeah, basically, and yeah, like basically, I like logically, I knew I wanted to put myself out there, push me to do uncomfortable things to slowly desensitize myself to it. But then, like on a visceral level, I just like, God damn it, I'm tired of this. I just want to do something crazy.
Right. That makes sense. If you're so caught up in yeah, just really wanting to express yourself and not feeling comfortable doing so. That has to really suck, dude.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I definitely struggled a lot with that, and yeah. But and I'm actually going through like another type of that experience now, because I've been like locked away at home for, is it approaching 2 years now? I don't
Whoa.
know.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Yeah, and like, I don't know. I think like both lashing out at the loneliness and lack of confidence and stuff, as well as just some being having an opportunity to just like immerse yourself in the loneliness and face it and experience it. I think both of those things are have been good for helping me build character and helping me gradually grow out of some of my old social limitations. Like, I don't even know how to explain it, but I guess, again, like a lot of it, like a lot of what I experienced in college with being lonely, it's turned into desperation and anger that I directed towards changing myself. But then there's also something to be said about just experiencing and understanding that experience, as well as like me being alone for two-ish years now, 1.5 years, I don't know. But like, I have learned to become accustomed and cope with it. I think that's also a useful skill and has also given me a lot of time to introspect and process myself, what I believe about things and all that. I think that's definitely helped me develop. And I'm a very introspective person. Like, different people emphasize different aspects of thinking and interacting with the world. And I definitely say that thinking in my head is like the space where I most naturally reside in. So I think it was especially useful for me to like just be isolated for a long time. I guess almost like Jesus going off into the wilderness and like having a spiritual journey. So yeah.
Right, having a period to really reflect on who you want to be and really like I can't imagine what that's like to have that amount of time to really think.
Well, I don't even know how to imagine it because it feels like a blur, so it's like, oh, like I want to like write novels someday, and like, I'll be able to use my experience to write from my heart and stuff. But then I think, try to think about my experiences. I'm like, huh, I don't even know what those experiences were like. I experienced them, and I still don't know.
But I imagine on a certain level, you've become more cognizant about how you think and how the world works around you. Like I would be really curious to read a novel that you wrote, because I know, because I think it would give me an insight just in terms of the perspective that you're taking on the world and how you're interpreting things. That's the beauty of a novel, right? Is you get to really experience a character's head, which is really the author's head, right? Because the author is inserting themselves into the character. I would be so interested. I would be deeply fascinated in terms of what that would be from you, because you fascinate me so deeply as just I love the way that you think about the world. And this has been the case since we met when you were 14 and I was 13, that you always had insight about things that I sometimes I just completely missed, that I just like that didn't even cross my mind. And you would go, well, hold on a second. This I remember this being especially clear when we took that media and critical thinking class. That Gary taught. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yes. I think in college, but
Yeah.
yeah. The Gary class was based.
The Gary class, and everyone would have insights that were kind of similar. And then you would go, well, what about this way? And I love that. I love it so much, Quinn. I adore it. And I would love to see a novel with that perspective. It would be so fresh. I think it would be awesome.
Thank you. That does mean a lot to me. I actually like that's not something that I really consciously would notice. Like that's like everyone would have similar viewpoints, and they'd be like, "But what about this?" Like from my perspective is like, I guess what I was noticing about that is like, oh, everyone's different from me, and I can't relate. Wah!
No, I think what we're really learning is that you're just not a sheep. Not just gonna follow the party line doctrine and say, yes, this is 100% right, no
I'm a
exceptions.
black goat. But Did you know that goat milk is the closest dairy animal's milk to human milk?
I did not know that, and now I do.
Same for me until some other random person told me that. I'm like, oh, interesting.
Have you drunk goat milk? Have you ever had it?
Yeah. Actually, raw goat milk. It's like, it was years ago, so it's hard to remember, but like, it's more creamy, and it's almost like, you know how like, when they have like a very rich chocolate milk, they like put cornstarch or crap in it to make it a bit thicker and creamier.
Sure.
Yeah. Goat milk, I'd say, is sort of like that. And then it has a slightly different taste. Like, I'd say it's probably a little bit richer. And then if you have ramen heat nearby, it'll also taste musky and awful. So don't have a ramen heat nearby when you're milking your goat.
That changes the taste of the goat milk?
Yeah. I think it's some sort of pheromonal reaction. Like I think that the mother goat reacts to the pheromones of the ram, and then that changes the taste of the milk.
That's insane. That's so weird. Animals are crazy, dude. That's wild.
Yes. But don't quote me on it. I'm not entirely sure. That's just my guess based on the fact that goat milk tastes musky and horrible when a ramen heat is nearby.
Okay. I want to look into that, because that sounds insane. Also totally believable. Also yeah. Insane. Yes.
That's just the world. Insane but believable.
Dude, we are coming up on an hour. Loved this podcast so much. I was so excited going into it.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited coming out of it. I really hope we can have you on the program again. I would love.
Yeah, I'd love to.
I feel like again. We really scratched the surface of things to talk about.
Yes.
I sent you a text earlier today with like seven
multiple
things on it.
Subjects. You just covered one.
I think we covered the top one. Barely. I think we can do a whole nother episode on homeschooling.
Another one on that same. Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that I was able to speak comfortably with you knowing that it was being recorded. They did have some concern about that, but glad. Yeah, very easy to talking with you like usual, so cool.
Yeah, no, I think this came together really well. Thank you so much, Quinn. I love this, and I hope you're on again at some point.
Yeah. I'll be stalking your DMs. I'll get on. Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on.
Dude, this was great. Quinn, seriously, man. I mean, it's a weird project I'm starting, and I don't know what it'll be yet. Like, genuinely, I have no idea what this podcast is going to be. The way I'm doing it now is I'm just shooting a bunch of episodes, and I feel like I'm in all of the episodes. So at a minimum, the through line will be me. But I can shoot a bunch and then try to delineate. I can try to figure out, dig around and go, what are these themes that keep cropping up? And then make the podcast about that, because I'll probably continue to talk about similar things.
Yeah, it could be interesting to focus it. Oh, and for... What are your plans for posting it? Like, where?
So my thought is the audio version will go out on all podcast places. So like the Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all of that. And then the video version will go out in a full format. So like the full hour. And then there'll be clips from it as well.
Okay.
And I think YouTube will be the place for those.
So I'd recommend, in addition to YouTube, selecting multiple other alt tech, just like, so because the alt tech sites are starting to grow with how crazy politics have gotten, that
sure.
People are being pushed away from this mainstream. And so it could potentially be a place to grow, as well as like let's say a platform like Odyssey is known for being inundated by alt-right content, which some of the people on Odyssey are alt-right. Some of them are just called alt-right because the opposition doesn't like them. But in any case, I'd take that as an invitation to add more alternate content to grow the platform in a more diverse way.
What is Odyssey? I'm not familiar with this.
So Odyssey is similar to YouTube, but it's built off of blockchain technology.
Okay.
So like it's decentralized. I think it has I think it is crypto methods of monetization. It might also have ad methods, I don't know. But like, yeah, so it's one alternate platform. Another
Is it free
alternate
to upload?
platform.
Do you know?
Yeah.
Okay. That's the main thing. I don't really want to pay to upload anyway.
Oh yeah, don't pay anywhere. But yeah, I think Odyssey, I think Rumble, maybe BitChute. I think some of those might be pay. I would look into them. But yeah, I just check out as many alt tech as possible and get on there. Just like both to put your foot in other places that could grow, basically essentially buying Dogecoin, and it might get big someday.
Sure.
And then on the other hand, just to diversify content so that we don't end up with alt tech just becoming a single political view.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting idea, is just like joining it with the purpose of like, hey, this isn't alt-right content that we're making. We're just talking about stuff. That's fascinating. I had not even thought of that. Ooh, I like that a lot in terms of
Oh,
like,
thanks.
it's almost like polluting the alternative space with media that's not extremely like
One
extremist.
way,
Yeah, yeah.
yeah. Like a lot of people are saying, like, "Oh man, I want to use this alt tech because it's filled with just a single point of view." I'm like, "You fucking moron! That's exactly why you post there."
Well, dude, I would love, if you don't mind, because I have not heard of any of these, in whatever bubble I'm in. I would love if you shot me an email and just like listed,
Yeah,
if you
all
don't
of
mind,
them
just
I
like
found.
different places. I'm happy to research and explore, but
Sure.
just like potential options. You're like, hey, you should look at that as a potential place to post.
Yeah,
Yeah, because
sure.
in my head it's
I'll
like
send an email.
YouTube is the option, but clearly there are plenty more.
Yeah, YouTube's where you get your viewer base, so the others are like you're just putting feelers out there and see if it takes off
That's sweet.
eventually.
And I guess there's less competition in those fields potentially as well, because
Yes.
there's so, yeah, like YouTube is getting whatever 500 hours a minute uploaded. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like YouTube, you'll get a lot more viewership. But yeah, the others, you can make it end up making it big. Like, let's say when there's not a lot of competition, you become a top platform. So, like, three guys are watching you as a top platform. But then if it eventually takes off, you could have 7 million viewers.
Right. Okay, I love, like, my entire marketing strategy did not include any of that, and that's seriously wonderful, because I was really trying to go the or I was thinking the traditional route of how to market something like this, and so I love that as an option, because that makes me, yeah, no, it just makes me hopeful that there are other methods out there that I don't have to just fight the YouTube algorithm to the nail.
Yes, and fight YouTube censorship.
Yeah, just
It's
get
like
demonetized for saying Joe Rogan or whatever. Like,
Yes, your YouTube video has been removed because you mentioned a Nazi.
yikes, yikes.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, Quinn,
Oh,
I'm sorry
cool.
that this is so quick. I wish you and I could just talk more without the podcast format around us.
Yeah, you gotta do a thing, and
I
but yeah, I'll
gotta
send you that
do a thing. I got
email.
rehearsals. I got my life is crazy right now. But I am so grateful we got to squeeze this in today. That's awesome.
Yeah, let's do it again. Like, I mean, whenever I'm available, I mean, this is just a fun thing to do, so.
Yeah, I love it. I'm just gonna start shooting as many of these as I can. I'm loving just talking to people. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to realize too, I was worried for a while I didn't have anything new to add to the conversation. But just our talk today about homeschooling and college and films that we've made together, I suddenly realized, wait a second, I'm crazy that I don't have anything to add to the conversation. Clearly, these are not things that everybody's talking about.
Yeah. It's like in Denison, people ask me what it's like to be homeschooled. Like, I forget the movie, but it's a super cringe movie that's like an acid trip where the main characters are homeschoolers. And they're like, is this accurate to homeschooling? And I'm like, yes. But yeah. Oh, nice
awesome, talking man. With you. Yes, nice talking with you as well. Let's do this again soon. I love you.
Love you too.
Talk to you later, man.
Bye.